This is the Perfectly Mentored Podcast with your host, Jason Portnoy.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Perfectly Mentored. I'm your host, Jason Portnoy. My guest is someone that I think took close to 9 years to finally get on the show. We were just talking about someone I respect tremendously, one of the best salespeople I've ever heard speak and ever met, Jared Glant. He's a VP with Grant Cardone. Jared, I mean, I'm super impressed by you. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much. And I really, really appreciate the acknowledgement there. I certainly don't consider myself any of those things that you said, but I'm glad that somebody out there in the world does. And I appreciate your persistence for following up to make sure that that this happens. So
someone taught me well.
Yeah. Bafu, baby.
For people who don't know who you are, I mean, and may not even know Grant at that point, why don't you give a little introduction about who you are, how you got started, and how you got to where you're at working with Grant and becoming the VP of sales?
Yeah, so Grant, obviously, I mean, if you don't know who Grant is, just go Google Grant Cardone and you'll get lost for days in the sea of content that he's got out there. But I'm his VP of sales today. It's just like we were talking before, it's been 9 years since I've worked for him, since I started working for him. And I came here when we were still based in LA at the time. And I had seen a YouTube video. I was living in San Diego. My dad had sent me a YouTube video for this guy. He was like, hey, this is the type of thing you need to be involved in. And I watched this video of this guy, and the video was called the You Can't Handle the Truth Sales Meeting. And it was Grant on a green screen. And there's a whole interesting story behind how he got that set up. But he's behind a green screen. He's basically just calling you out. You know, like for those of you who don't know, one of Grant's slogans is don't be a little bitch. It's like pick yourself up by your bootstraps, do the hard thing, show up, put in the work. And so the message really resonated with me. I was like, I got to go work for this guy. Like he is the guy. This is who I need to be around. So I called the office every day for about a month and a half until I finally got the opportunity to interview, got subsequently hired as a quasi receptionist slash salesperson. And I think we were talking before the podcast here that I may have even fielded a call from you at one point trying to get a hold of Grant back in the day. But it started out as a sales job, and I just continued to see the opportunity, continued to create opportunity, and continued to add value in a lot of different areas, as many as I could, and really just approach the business as if it was my own, you know. And over time, hard work, time, opportunity, all those things continue to show up, then good things happen. And so today I'm the VP of the company, helped take it from about $2.5 million to almost $60 million a year in sales. We just put on the largest event for entrepreneurs of its kind in history. 34,441 tickets were sold to the event. Down here in Miami, we did it in a freaking baseball stadium. So it's been an amazing ride. Lots of ups and downs, lots of hard stuff. I'm sure we'll talk about some of that today, but you know, that's really who I am and how I got where I'm at today.
So you touched on something really interesting. Some people say, I'm not a salesperson. I can't become a salesperson. You know, that's just not me. That's not who I have in me. When you started with Grant, did you consider yourself a salesperson?
Well, there's two questions in there. So number one, I would say yes, that I did consider myself a salesperson because I'd always worked in sales jobs, but I wasn't like a practitioner. Like I didn't understand why I was doing the things that I was doing, you know, like you can see somebody with some natural ability, like they'll, you know, pick up a golf club and swing a golf club and actually have not that bad of a swing, but they have no idea the mechanics of the swing and how it works. They just do what feels right. And so a lot of salespeople experience personality-based success where it's strictly because of their personality that they're able to persuade and influence people to get them to make a decision. I think that much like golf, there's a lot of things that go on in a swing. And there's a lot of things that happen in a sales process. And to truly become great at selling, you need to actually understand what's happening and where you're at in the deal. So my first answer to your question is yes, I did consider myself a salesperson. Part one, answer 1A is I really didn't become a salesperson until I started working for Grant, because really what I was experiencing was personality-based success as a salesperson. Second question that was loaded in there was, people say that they're not a salesperson. That is like at the very beginning, like, you know, when God created the heavens and the earth or whatever, the first thing that happened in the Bible, or, you know, the chicken or the egg, whatever you want to call it. The very beginning, like the chapter one of life, is you are a salesperson. It has nothing to do with your profession. In life, you either get what you want or you don't. Like, at its most like fundamental core, you either get what you want or you don't. Most people that I know would prefer to get what they want than not get what they want. The only difference is the people that get what they want have a few skills, a few abilities, a few techniques, a little bit more persistence, a little bit more drive towards getting the things that they want. You want to get a job, you want to buy a house, you want to go to a store and go shopping, you want to buy a motorcycle, you want to buy a boat, you know, you want your kids to go to school. Every single one of those things is a sale. And so when people say they don't like selling, then I think that's just, it starts the chapter one of the story. They're reading the book through the wrong lens. And so one of the things that we really try to do is help people understand that, like, you are a salesperson. Everybody's a salesperson. You don't got to like it. Like, if I could do something else and make money, then I would. But the fact is that so many people don't like selling that there's so much opportunity there for people that are actually good enough and skilled enough. It has nothing to do with your personality, by the way. Like, introverted people can be unbelievable salespeople because of the way that they process information and the way that they communicate with people. It's very different, very powerful. So everybody is a salesperson.
You know, you touched on something really important in the beginning when you were talking, is that I think if you're going through the sales process, if you can't and you think, oh, I'm a great salesperson, I don't need training, I don't need to go through and get better because I get all the success. But if you can't pinpoint why you're winning deals and why you're losing deals, there's a problem. You have that raw skill, but you don't have the mechanics.
So pick anything that you want to get good at. It requires education, it requires practice, it requires study. Think of something that you're already doing that you want to improve at. It requires more of those things. And the higher up in your ascent towards greatness in that area, the more work it actually requires. And so, you know, we sell sales training. That's what we do. We help companies grow their business through their people's ability to sell. And we are the weights in the gym of business. And, you know, I'm working out with a trainer right now, went down in my gym this morning. The equipment has not changed. I've been in the same building for 3 years, the same equipment every time I go down there. But the more I use it, the stronger I get. You know, the more often I go down there, the more frequently I go down there, the more my body starts changing. When I don't go in there, I start packing it in a little bit. You know what I mean? I start getting slower. I start losing endurance. Like, the same things happen in business. The same thing will happen in your marriage. The same thing will happen as a parent. The same thing will happen in every area of your life. If you want to be good at something, you have to continue to feed it, develop it, and grow it. And most people, for some reason, like in the sales space, nah, I got it. We're good. I don't need to read any sales books. I'm good. They're not. They're getting by on their ability and their innate ability.
They're leaving money on the table.
They're not getting by on precision developed skill. They're getting by on ability.
I want to talk about something else. An important part, the elevator pitch, right? Your introductory pitch and how important it is. What components go into a great elevator pitch?
Well, so you could read a ton on this. This is a subject that a lot of people have covered. For me, I think it's looking at your elevator pitch kind of as a cone upside down. Like, you have to start with a big broad problem or topic, something that is agreeable to everybody. And as you start moving down, you get more narrowly focused on what it is that you actually do. People talk about elevator pitches to me, it drives me crazy. When they try to be like, what do you do? And then they tell me, and I still don't understand what they do. Like, you know, somebody asked me, hey, what do you do? Well, our company identified a problem that most businesses want to grow their sales, grow their incomes, and grow their revenues. The problem that they run into is they don't have enough people that are skilled enough to actually help them do it. Have you ever experienced that? Of course you have. Who hasn't? So what we did is we developed a tool that would give your people access to sales training material in bite-sized chunks to help solve specific problems so that they can be more productive every single day, thus driving you towards your goal, right? Of increased sales, increased revenue. So like, tell people what you do. Like people, they're so afraid of like, of telling people what, have you experienced this, Jason?
Yeah.
It's like, what do you do? And they try to dress it all up and create all these things. Like, where at the end you're like, huh?
Well, I think it comes down to a lot of times they can't identify their USP, like their unique selling like proposition. So they just try to like fluff it up or get fancy and overdo it.
Yeah. Or the opposite way, they don't dress it up at all. What do you do? We do sales training.
What's the common reason or the area that people fail the most at when it comes to sales, and how do you solve it?
Commitment. Commitment and discipline. It has nothing to do with like a particular area of the sales process. It's just lack of commitment, lack of discipline. People aren't committed enough to do the work. They're not disciplined enough to do it for long enough to actually see the results. Same thing with the gym, same thing with the diet, same thing with the relationship. Has nothing to do with the actual activity. It has to do with the person's commitment to actually do it the right way, and then the discipline to do it over a long enough period of time to see the result that they're looking for. That's why so many people think that training doesn't work, diet don't work, exercise don't work, because they're not doing the right thing long enough to actually get the result that they're looking for.
Well, we live in a world where people want quick fixes and quick results.
Doesn't exist, dude.
You know? So there's no area you've seen the most, like people suck at follow up the most, like that seems to be the.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, but again, like, okay. So that the real issue is commitment and discipline. If you want to go there, you know, it's, making cold calls, follow up, and closing the deal. Those are the three areas that if you could tell a salesperson, hey, I'm going to teach you how to become a rock star cold caller, a lethal closer, and you're going to follow up like a freaking maniac. Like if you could do that, a salesperson could go anywhere and be successful if you could handle those three things.
The problem is you tell them that they need to make 300 phone calls a day and then
they're not committed enough to do it. That's where the commitment comes in.
Love it. Is cold calling dead?
No. We have one business that did $40 million last year because of cold calls. So it ain't dead.
What's the most important thing to remember when doing cold calling?
Frequency beats skill. Frequency beats perfection.
Water beats rock.
Dude. Because what happens is people, again, it's you have to get the reps and the volume of activity to a level that you can work everything out. Like, cold calls take place in such a glimpse of time on a call, and it's over with. So there's so many things that you have to do to get to the point where you're not even thinking, and it just rolls, and you don't hesitate, and you handle problems quickly, confidently. You're actually looking for the objection. That's what we try to get our team to do. Like for the first 30 days, we're literally. Like we tell them, yeah, we want you to get deals. Like for the first 30 days, we want them to get blasted with rejection. We want them to get blasted with rejection, and we want to see if we can get their call volume to sustain at 200 calls or more per day. Like all we're trying to do is build in one discipline, that one skill. Dude, can you show up, make 200 calls, and get your face kicked in? Because if you can do that, then you can actually focus on getting better at the call. But again, if you're not committed enough to show up and be willing to do that, and you're not disciplined enough to do that over a long enough period of time to get past the pain of learning how to do it, then you're not going to be successful. So
it's like a numbers game. It's like going to the bar and never talking to a girl because you're afraid of rejection the whole time.
Yeah, so it is a numbers game, but eventually it's a skill game, right? So in the beginning, it's a numbers game, but like eventually your numbers will only take you to a certain level until you're like, okay, the only way this call calculation, we take people through this exercise of, you know, basically identifying how many phone calls they need to make to hit their income target. And we break it down by, you know, number of call, the money they want to make, commission per sale, number of presentations required to get that many sales, number of appointments required to get that many demos, number of calls to make in order to get that many appointments. Like, we break the whole thing down and we're like, dude, if you want to make 250 grand a year, then you've got to make, you know, 300 calls a day. Now, you're making 300 calls a day over and over and over again, the bar's not moving, like, then you need to actually get better on the call. And so that's where your conversion rate to appointments, your conversion rate to demos, your show rate for appointments and demos starts changing. So, but the very first thing is frequency, 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 frequency.
I asked Gary Vaynerchuk the same question. I guess it goes to you because you've dealt with a lot of people. How many of the questions you get when people ask you for advice or tips are just self-validation questions? They already know the answer.
At least 70%.
Does that, so I asked him, the follow-up was, does that bother you?
It's just them showing their own lack of security and looking for validation in somebody else. That's not my issue. That's their issue. Does it frustrate me? We talk about it all the time. Like, people do not know how to ask questions. Like, we have a membership community for Cardone U. I think I saw you as a member in the group in there. Like, we have a group in there, and part of that group is that, you know, we try to answer people's questions. There are specific business sales questions, money questions. And then we also do a deal where we have people email their questions in, and Grant goes through and he creates a video, and we post the video in the group, and he basically is doing Q&A. As we're going through, we're kind of like, we're bringing all these questions together and trying to assemble them in a way to send them over to Grant. Like, people do not know how to ask questions. Like, we have to do so much work on a question to actually make it a question. Like, it's crazy. Like, somebody will come in with one sentence question and I'm like, perfect. Other guy comes in with a freaking paragraph, all this stuff that really doesn't matter. Like, it's
anyways. No, I'm definitely in that community. Also, like, one is, I think I'm actually pretty good at sales, but like anything else, I mean, NBA players go, they shoot around, they're on the court practicing all year round, they're in the gym. I think what you've developed is not just for, hey, how does someone become a salesperson, but how does someone keep their skills sharp?
Yeah, and I think really, like, one of the big things that I've seen change in my sales conversations, and this is something that I got to develop over time listening to Grant, is, and again, like, if you would have asked me 9 years ago when I was getting started, you know, hey, what's the most important skill in sales? I'd say cold calling. Like, you've got to get great at it, because I'm getting like literally like brutalized every single day on the phone, right? So I'm like, oh yeah, I got to master cold calling. And then you get to the point where you can get people on the phone, then you're like, it's got to be closing. Closing is the hardest part of the call. But actually, asking the right questions is magic. Like if you know how to, in a I don't want to say covert, because I think that's the wrong way to say it, but if you know how to subtly ask questions that will allow the prospect's guard to drop so that they give you real answers and they don't feel like they're getting set up, and you're asking them questions for problems that they may or may not be experiencing that you know you can solve for, the close is easy.
Like, if you're listening
and you have to listen to people, so I guess, yeah, it's two parts. It's asking the question and then listening. And then that leads you into knowing how to present your product in a way that you show them the thing they need to see in order to say yes. So in the beginning, it's like, man, I just want to get them on the phone. Then in the next stage is like, I got them on the phone, but man, I suck at closing. Well, you suck at closing because you do a bad demo or presentation because you ask terrible questions. So you show them the wrong thing and you don't really know what their problem is. So it all kind of starts morphing and moving around. But, and that just changes as the skill evolves and develops. But the questions, like, sometimes Grant asks these questions and I'm just like, dude, what a question. Like, we call
an example.
We call them hard questions. Like, you know, somebody agrees to do a sales presentation with you, and then just right out of the gate, you know, hey, Jason, appreciate you being on the call with me today. I got to ask a question, man. Why now? Why'd you agree to the call? Like, I'm just curious. I followed up with you for 9 years. Like, why today? What changed?
Yeah.
Like, just asking, like, very direct questions that put people back, you know? You know, hey, well, you know, why? Well, because, you know, we have this agency that we work with, and we're possibly thinking about switching. You know, so, like, well, dude, what don't you like about him? You know, how much were you paying them? Like, how much were you paying them? Was it worth it? Like, just very, very questions that most people think, oh, I can't ask that. It's too direct. Those are the questions that usually get responses. Like,
I'll give you a perfect example. Just today, it's funny you brought that up. Just today, I had a prospect call me, and they sat there and said, it's between you and another agency. So I sat there and said, okay. And they're like, you know, both of you have different strengths. So I'm trying to debate. I'm like, what do they have that I don't? So she started talking. I'm like, what would make you want to go with, what would you need for you to sign with me right now over them? And she started just talking, opening up, and things that we never even discussed on the first phone call or anything like that, opened up a whole thing. And she's like, wow, I really appreciate you asking all these questions and diving in. She actually signed an hour before this podcast, by the way.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. Congrats. You know, another great question when you're going up against somebody like that is, if the money were exactly the same, who would you do the deal with?
Oh, that's a good one.
Like, and then they're going to be like, if you've done your job right, they're going to go, well, you. You know, we always had a higher price product than most people in the marketplace. We've always had it. And so, you know, they'd say, hey, you know, we're going up between you and somebody else. Like, they're charging $500 a month. We're charging $1,500 and a $4,000 setup fee. Yeah, you know, you're going up against somebody else, but, you know, you're quite a bit more expensive. Totally understand. Not the first time I've heard it. Let me ask you a question. If the money were exactly the same, who would you do the deal with? Well, you, of course, is normally the response.
Yeah, hopefully.
Right? And if it's not, if they say it really wouldn't matter or them, then you've messed something up already. Yeah. Right? Like, if the money were exactly the same, who would you do business with? Well, you. Why? Why would you do business with us if the money were the same? Well, because of this. Interesting. Why else? Well, because of that and that. Why else? Like, get them to go through and list out all of the reasons why they'd rather do business with you. And then in this particular situation, you're really only trying to close them on $1,000 a month.
And they end up selling themselves.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you're segueing into my next question perfectly, but I kind of want to go backwards because something else just came to mind. What about the people who are listening saying, yeah, easy for Jarrett to say, he has a name like Grant Cardone behind him, right? So when they call versus another sales company, yeah, easy for them to say Grant, like everyone wants to do business with Grant Cardone. They want that name. So it's like, obviously, you know, he could justify the higher price.
Yeah. So you just need to, like, dude, if your agency charges an $8,000 retainer and 15% of spend, and somebody else is a $4,000 retainer and a 10% percentage, 10% of the spend, like, why are you worth more? Like, what do you do that's different? Like one of the most powerful questions that people can really ask about themselves is, why should people pay more to do business with you? Why should people pay more to do business with your company? And why should people pay more to do business with you than somebody else that works in your company? Like if me and Francisco were both salespeople for Grant Cardone, I should be able to justify why somebody should pay more money to do business with Jared than Francisco. All these are exercises that build conviction. They help you work your pitch out. But like, why should somebody pay more to do business with you? Come up with a list. You ought to be able to sell your product to anybody for double. Even if your product's the same price, you ought to be able to justify them spending double to do business with you. But it's like the person who trains to pick up a 100-pound bag of cement and carry it 100 yards, but they train with 100-pound bag to carry it 100 yards, and then they end up, you know, stepping on something on the football field, and they can't make it, rather than trying to do like a 150-pound bag, 150 yards, so that the 100 pounds makes it easy. Make sense?
Yeah, overtrain.
Yeah. I remember Tim Grover, he's a friend of ours, and he said he trained Michael Jordan, wrote a book, Relentless. He's an amazing guy. But he said he was like, Michael Jordan used to train so hard so that the games were easy. He used to say, I train so hard because I want the games to be easy. Think about that.
Yeah.
And we're out there trying to make money. What are we doing? What are we doing to make, what type of discipline are we exercising on ourselves that's so hard that showing up to make money is easy?
That's a bomb. How important is mindset in becoming a great salesperson?
It's a component of it, but it's not it's discipline. I guess if discipline and mindset are the same thing, then it's vital.
Like, but you're a pretty confident guy, right? So how important is that? How important is that confidence?
I'm serious. You don't know that. I lack confidence all the time. I'm insecure all the time. But one of the most valuable lessons that I learned from Grant is that you don't get paid big money for just doing the things that you want to do in life. He doesn't have to do shit today. Like, nothing. Like, if he walked out of here, dropped the mic, and was like, I'm out, I'm done, I'm good. Dude, his kids are taken care of. Generational wealth was created by him. He does not have to show up every day. But the fact that he continues to show up and does the things and do the things that he does not want to do, it's so inspiring. Because I think that's where people truly become great. Greatness and motivation, it doesn't create you to do something once. Like, it should be the thing that allows you to do the thing that you don't want to do when you don't want to do it. Like, I think that's where the big divide is between the super successful people and the people that just get stuck at average, is the most successful people are just willing to do the things more frequently that they don't want to do. And it seems so simple. It's like, stay an extra hour, go home and read instead of watch TV. You know, go exercise instead of sleep in. Like, just the littlest, tiniest things. But over time, with commitment and discipline, you're able to do those things.
I mean, Jesse Itzler talks about that, right? He says, whenever you think you're done, always just do one more, right? Yeah. Whatever it is, do one more, because then you're conditioning yourself to always do one more, right? So if you're done sending emails, send one more email. If you're done at the gym, do one more rep.
100%. And people just don't have the discipline to actually do that, though, you know? It sounds great when we say it, but actually doing it for people, they can't, you know?
Well, 90% of the job is showing up, right?
Maybe.
One of the most common objections, and I know what you're going to say, it's not an objection, is price, right? So I reached out to people and I said, if you were to speak to a salesperson, they're going to train you on one specific area, what would it be? And they said, I always get pushback on price. And we both know that's just a lack of value exchange, right? To some extent. Mm-hmm. Just for the listeners listening who haven't heard this before, what are your thoughts on the price objection and how to solve that?
Yeah. So, you know, there's things that you can do strategically in your offer to give you places to go on price. So one thing is providing options for people, like giving people an A, B, and C option. You know, typically your B option is the one that your most popular package, the one most people land on. You don't need to call it that, but you can say, hey, you know, I put together three options today. Option A is 100K. Option B, this is the one most businesses like yours go with. It's 55K. And then option C is 40K. You know, which one of these best fits your budget, your goals, and what you're trying to do? And then move them into an option rather than one thing. That way you can actually use the price of the other programs or the other packages to negotiate the deal. Because really what you're trying to do is you're trying to go back in, and if you've done a good enough job in the beginning of identifying what their problem is, the cost, the money lost by not addressing that. So like one of the things that we do is, you know, we'll be like, be talking to Jason, hey, what's one of the biggest problems that you're having with your sales team right now?
You want me to answer?
Yeah, sure.
Full pipeline.
Pipeline, man. Why do you say that?
I think we just need our pipeline more full for them to make more phone calls and to get more people, to get more clients.
Yeah, to get more clients. Yeah. How many people do you have?
In sales?
Yeah.
Two.
Two. Huh. Let me ask you this. How much do you think it costs you every month because your salespeople don't have full pipelines? Like how many deals do you think those two salespeople miss?
Probably a lot.
Like two per person?
Could be.
So you see how I'm actually trying to nail you down on something right now?
Yeah.
What's the average client worth for you?
Anywhere from 5,000 to 15,000 per month.
So let's call it 10,000 a month. So that's $40,000 a month in missed opportunity if I could solve that one problem for you.
Love it.
I'm circling the wagons now, right?
I don't like when I'm in the hot seat. This is my show.
Yeah, I'm just saying like you have to have the right information. People say that there's price problems because they didn't do a good job asking questions in the beginning, so they didn't pitch the program the right way. Dude, what if the reason there was a price objection is because the guy or the agency they were currently with had a $100,000 offer and you pitch them 5, 10, and 15 and they're like, yeah, I don't want to spend the money for it. Yeah. You know, I don't think we can afford it. When in their mind, they're thinking, dude, what's 5, 10, 15 grand going to do for my business? This is a waste of money. They're not going to tell you, hey, I don't think your solution can solve my problem. Like when people, God, this is so deep. Like there's so many different layers of things that are addressed with, like, people ask, they're like, hey, what's one thing I can do to be successful? It's like, dude, there's 50 things and they're all connected. Like, so like in a sales process, your questions should be linked to your presentation and then your close should be linked to the questions. So like everything is existing within each other in that sales process and you need to ask the right questions so you show the product the right way. So when you get into the close and they bring up price or they need to wait, another question in the fact-finding phase, like why today? There's a reason they're talking to you today and not 6 months ago or not putting you off for another 6 months. So you got to bring that back up in the close. Everything that you do in the sales process is for a purpose. And if you don't know when you're saying words to the customer, if you don't know what the purpose of those words are, you're either doing one of two things. You're moving closer to a sale or you're moving away from one. That's it. When you don't know, you're blah, 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 you're talking about all this stuff and you don't know what you're talking about or why you asked that question. If you don't know the answer to the question you just asked before they told you, you will end up in a bad situation in front of the customer. Because maybe you're trying to take them down a road and their answer completely derails the line that you were going down. I know it's happened to me before in sales calls where I'm like, don't you think it would be a good idea to have somebody, you know, a third party come in and train your salespeople? Actually, no, because we had a third party in here. The guy came in drunk, cussed everybody out, and ended up getting in a fight with our receptionist. Right? Like yeah. You don't know. Like it's a stupid question.
Yeah.
Like, don't you want to increase your sales? Dumb question. Don't you want to save money? Stupid, ridiculous question. I've heard people ask these questions on calls before, and I'm just like I've heard our sales guys, we sell sales training. Don't you want your people to get better? Dumb question. It insults the intelligence of the person you're talking to. Like hard questions are important, and great questions can change the process, but bad questions can stop you dead in your tracks.
Love it. I mean, the next part is follow-up, right? I think we both know the importance of following up. What are some tips you have for the listeners to...
Did you get on my training last week on follow-up?
I was not, no.
Dude, I did it in the group. It's in the Facebook group. I'll just cover the three tips that I gave in our Facebook group. Step number one, something I call VAFU. I'm pretty sure I came up with that. I've never seen it anywhere else before. So you know how you come up with an idea and you're like, oh man, that's a great idea. I'm going to start this app and it's you pictures and people can share their pictures. And then they're like, oh yeah, hey, it's Instagram.
Yeah.
Didn't know about it. Like, this is an idea where I'm pretty sure nobody out there has come up with this and called it this before. It's called VAFU.
Okay.
V-A-F-U, VAFU, value added follow-up. This is critical to follow-up. The way that you differentiate yourself with a client or a prospect is you're different. There's a lot of noise. The marketplace is crowded. Most people are getting involved in industries and businesses that are getting more competitive than they've ever gotten before. The way that you stand out is to be different by bringing them something of value. Every single time you touch the customer, you need to bring something different. Every time you call the customer, you should have a different reason to call. If you're like, here's like version.
So not sending out the same email over and over saying, hey, I don't think you got my email.
Yeah,
my totally. Email wasn't terrible. Working yesterday.
Terrible, terrible. And so you got to think of follow-up in two ways now too. Like, there's pre-sale follow-up and then there's post-sale follow-up. Very different. Pre-sale follow-up is the one that most people fail at. Like, post-sale follow-up, the sale's already done. Hey, thanks so much. Want to do business with you again. They touch them a couple more times, but at least they got the customer. Like, yeah. you miss on the front end of the deal because you don't even follow up enough to get their attention. So VAFU, value added follow up, come up with a plan, a program where you're bringing something different and valuable. Like, if I was trying to sell you sales training, dude, I would try to connect sales training and marketing and agencies in so many different ways, different videos, different resources, different blogs, articles, videos. I'd get infographics. I'd send you stuff in the mail. Obviously, depending on the value of the transaction, you can spend more time or resources building all those things out. But you have to become like, I had a client, I'll never forget this. I had a client that I was cold calling. He was a car dealership, and I was trying to sell him sales training. And I called this guy for probably 8 months, 3 or 4 times a week. Emails all the time, like nonstop. I knew this because he had submitted a lead online and then ghosted, like never could get a hold of him. But when somebody submits a lead for me, that's like, there's a yes in there somewhere. So
yeah, chasing the car.
Dude, I nailed this guy for like 8 months. And then finally he picked up the phone one day and he goes, hey man, I'm ready to go. Just, you know, What's the price? I didn't even have to demo him on the program. He's like, no, I don't need to see it. Just tell me how much it is. It's like this. He's like, okay, send me a contract for X. And I was like, dude, what happened? What took so long? He's like, honestly, dude, the last like 4 weeks, I was playing all of your voicemails and showing all your emails to my sales team in our meetings every week because I kept going, this is what we need to be doing with our customers. This is how we need to be following up. So I actually became the example for him of the right thing to do. I became a resource for him. Like, we would go through and send people, like obviously Grant has a ton of content, so that helps. But we'd send YouTube links. Hey, here's a great sales meeting on X. Let me know if you guys would like me to do a follow-up on it. Like, we would, everything we did was about creating value. We have an internal thing that we talk about here. Give, give, give. Like, continue to give value, like always, always, always. Give in abundance and you will get. And so step number one is VAFU. Step number two is speed. So tip number one for follow-up is like, add value every time you touch them. Reach out for a different reason than I want to do a deal with you. Step number two is you've got to be fast. Like, if you could get follow-up and speed the leads down to like minutes, like less than 10 minutes, your contact rate goes like astronomical. Your close rate goes through the roof because you took time out of the equation. Speed and time can kill deals. Too much time can kill a deal. Not fast enough can kill a deal. So speed is incredibly important. It communicates confidence. It communicates certainty. If you've
ever asked somebody, there's also momentum as a factor in there as well, right?
100%. You know, like, I'm used to going online right now to Amazon and buying something in 60 seconds. Like, I can go outside and call Uber and have a car out there in 3 minutes. You know, I can get my lunch. Like, everything now is about speed. And so when you don't operate with speed to a customer, just think about what that communicates. Do they have enough staff? Are they going to treat me like this? Man, are they that confident in their products or services? You know, man, should I really be buying this right now? Maybe we need to wait, you know. And then as they're going through, they click back on Yahoo News or whatever, and they get retargeted with an ad from a, you know, pair of jeans that they were looking at online the previous day, and then you lose them.
Yep.
Like, oh yeah, I forgot to buy those jeans. I left them in my shopping cart, and then they bounce. So speed is everything. Speed is the new big. Speed is everything. BAFU, tip number one, add value every contact. Number two, speed is power. And then number three is you have to use multiple forms of communication always. Never rely on one form of anything. Never rely on just the phone. Never rely on just email. Never rely on just social. Never rely just on Facebook for people that are in the social space. Never rely on just Twitter. Never rely just on YouTube. Never rely on one form of anything. Add handwritten letters, add personal visits, add gifts, add telegrams, add faxes. Y'all think faxes are dead? Faxes are alive and well. Still got fax machines in their office. And you know how many people send faxes? Very few. So you got to exploit every single one of these opportunities. But most people aren't committed enough to do more than one thing. And most people aren't disciplined enough to do all of the things over a long enough period of time to get far ahead.
Is there such thing as being too pushy or enough is enough?
If you're not a professional. For sure. Like we call it like what you were saying about before the emails. That's something that I have called in my team internally, broken record follow-up. That'll piss somebody off. And we've pissed people off before too. We've gotten cease and desist letters. You know, but the truth is that when you get to that point, I promise you, it's because something you are doing is out. Like something you are doing is if you were providing enough value to them where they were like, damn, I'm interested in this. Like there is a point at which something is so valuable to you, Jason, as a prospect of mine for sales training, that you won't call a cease and desist on me. You won't tell me to put you on the do not call list because you're genuinely going to be interested in. That is not up to you. That is up to me as the salesperson. So as the salesperson in your space for what you're doing, you need to become so valuable and such a resource to your prospect that they're actually interested in your follow-up.
I mean, you had a great line I heard you say a long time ago. If you could replicate it for the podcast, it'd be great. About how, you know, when someone says you're too pushy or whatever, just you said something along the lines like,
"Dude, well, please, yeah, don't, please, do not confuse my."
No, that's not finished, but that's not the one. You can finish that. I'll let you go for it.
Please don't confuse my conviction and belief that I know my product and service can help you fix your problem. For being pushy. That's not my intention at all. Go ahead.
But the one you said, that's great too. But the one you said was along the lines, like, if I'm this persistent now, or I'm giving you this type of service now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll let you roll with it. I'll let you deliver.
Yeah. Dude, like, hey man, you're being really pushy. You're being really aggressive. Sir, can you imagine if I'm working this hard to get your business, how hard I'll work to keep it?
Yeah. That's a great one. That's a good one. So you have a wife and a boy now. Congratulations.
Thank you. Most amazing thing ever.
How important is work-life balance? You work really, really hard, but some people just sit there. Like, I want you to define what work-life balance looks like to you.
I'm going to rob Grant a little bit on this, but before I heard it from him, I read it in a quote. Let me see if I can read you this. Because this is something that for me embodies this embodies the way I want to be remembered and the way that I want to live my life. It says, "The master in the art of living makes little distinction between his work and his play, his labor and his leisure, his mind and his body, his education, his recreation, his love, and his religion. He hardly knows which is which. He simply pursues his vision of excellence at whatever he does, leaving others to decide whether he is working or playing. Because to him, he's always doing both. So like that to me is everything. Like I don't want to think like I have to go out of work mode and into home mode. Like we run a really we push hard here, right? And there are times where I know that I'm not being the husband I need to be or the dad that I need to be, but it doesn't go for very long. And me and my wife are on the same page, you know, like I can't come here and do what I'm doing here if my home life is a mess. You know, I can't show up and work out all day and have energy to go home and be a great dad to Jake if I'm overweight and I'm not eating right and I'm not healthy, you know, I'm smoking weed all the time. Like, so all of these things, like, but I can't also be a great husband and a great father if I'm not providing a living that my family deserves to live either. So it's like, it is important. Work-life balance is everything. But for me, I just try to go all in everywhere, you know, and, you know, I was going to say, Grant explained this in one way where he's like, I don't have like Grant at work or Grant at home. Like I don't go into different modes. He said, I'm just Grant all the time. I'm just who I am all the time. And that's just the way I live my life. And, you know, he wrote a book called The 10X Rule, wildly popular book, probably the most successful book that he's ever published. But in that book, a lot of people, I think, take that 10X message and they apply it in one dimension of their life. And you cannot, by definition, be 10X if you're 2X somewhere else. So you have to be a 10X dad. You have to be a 10X husband. You have to be a 10X business person. You have to be 10X in your community. Like that is what 10X means. It's an obsession with being excellent in all areas of your life. Cause that is the way that we should live our life. Like you should be able to look back and go, man, I was everything in every area of life. And it may sound like a far out target or goal. It may seem like it's unattainable. At times, it's just not going to be possible for you to be who you need to be in every area of your life, but it should be the target. And if you set that target and you push for that target, then you will certainly be better off than somebody who didn't have it as a target at all.
It also comes down to commitment, right? Like my father said at a young age, when you commit to something, you go all in, you keep that commitment.
That's right.
I'd be doing the listeners injustice by not asking a question of what are some of the top 3, 5, whatever you want to give lessons you've had learning from that you've had or you've learned from Grant in the time that you spent with him.
Yeah. So one thing for sure is accept responsibility. It's a hard thing for people to do. The more you can't control the things that you refuse to accept responsibility for. And if you refuse to accept responsibility for it, you end up with an excuse. And so for me, it was, I had made a lot of excuses in my life. I had made some bad choices in my life. And it wasn't until I really kind of grabbed on to, dude, if it's going to happen, it's going to be because you decided it was going to happen. You made it happen. You didn't accept any of the excuses or the lies that you've told yourself. Like it's going to happen because you decide that everything that happens around you is your responsibility. Like we have an office with 7 departments, 125 employees. Like, dude, I accept responsibility for what happens in other departments, you know? And the more things start falling apart, like the if there's problems, recurring problems, the more I accept responsibility for it. When things are going great, I step back and I let things continue to run. But when things start going wrong, I have to get more involved. Like I accept more responsibility for it because if that fails, I know I want it to be because I was in there and I went down swinging, not because some knucklehead sabotaged the ship, right? So that's number one. Number two is think big. Like constantly think big. You know, one of the best benefits about being around a guy like Grant, you know, he owns $1 billion in real estate, pays cash for a G5. Like the amount of money that he has, and you'd never know it because he doesn't spend money. Like, you know, when you think people have money, you think they spend money in a certain way. Dude, Grant has more money than anybody I've ever met in my life and spent any type of time with. And, you know, he just keeps thinking bigger. And it's a really hard thing if you're not connected to it, you're not looking for it, or you're not paying attention to it. It's a really hard thing to do. I remember at one point in my life, I thought $100,000 a year was like, whoa. Like if I could make $100,000 a year, that would be sweet. Like, I thought that was like the moonshot. Dude, I make more money than that in a month now. Like, it's because I was thinking too small. Like I was living in people in cities all across the country are living in these tiny towns. In the small think of those areas just penetrates and actually holds them down. And that's why you got to get connected with people like Grant. You don't need to be mentored by Grant, but you need to follow him and you need to listen to him. You know, I know and maybe money isn't your target or your goal, but dude, what is a big goal for you? Like maybe you don't want to make $1 million a year or $5 million a year or $1 million a month. Maybe those aren't your goals, but like, what is your big goal for the thing that you want to get out of life? You know, like I know a guy who has a son and he and his wife got divorced and he got custody of his kid. And he wasn't making a lot of money at the time. And he decided that he wanted his big goal wasn't to make $5 million a year. It was to be the best freaking dad on planet Earth. Never miss a game, be there for him, pick him up from school, coach him, mentor him. He wrote him a letter every day that he put in his lunch. Like I was blown away by the commitment that this guy made to being the best possible dad that he could be. And so I think that big think, it doesn't just have to be about money. It should be about something, because that's a thing that will get you excited. Big think should get you excited. Maybe you don't want to make $5 million a year. Maybe you want to build 5 schools in Africa. And that just gets you excited. Maybe you want to rescue kids that have been kidnapped and put into slavery. Like maybe you want to, go down and locally and visit kids that are terminally ill. Like, I don't know, but set a big goal that gets you outside of the mundane and the average. Be great at something. Like,
let's be honest, making more money makes all that a lot easier.
I mean, that's the undertone of the whole thing, right? So, so money makes everything possible. Grant posted something the other day. He goes, money can't buy happiness, but poverty can't buy anything.
It's so true.
Right?
It's great.
So, yeah. So let me see here. So accept responsibility, think big, and like the more I think about it, it's just do the things that you don't want to do. A lot of people say, do the things that you love and you'll never work a day in your life. But I think that if people search only for the things that they love doing, and if you really look at the people who say that they only do the things they love doing now, what preceded that was them doing a lot of the things that they didn't want to do. And, you know, like, I don't want to show up to an office every day, but I do it. I don't want to work from 8:45 to 6:30 every night or every day in an office. I'd like to go travel every month. I'd like to, you know, be a laptop, you know, whatever they call that, laptop, you know, entrepreneur or whatever. Like, I'd love to do that.
Yeah.
But the reality is I know that I have an opportunity here that's going to allow me to go freaking all in, make a ton of money. I'm investing every penny I make in real estate. That's creating and building passive income that I'll be able to live off of for the rest of my life. and to be able to have more of those choices. So, you know, a lot of people out there saying, hey, you know, do the thing you love doing. You know, you should love life. Dude, if you can get great at doing the things that you hate doing, you will be wildly successful. Because there's too few people out there that are willing to do the thing that they don't want to do in order to get what they want. And that's why most people don't get the life they want and the things they want.
Love it. On that note, Jared, thank you so much for doing this. Really appreciate it. For the listeners who want to reach out to you, where can they find you?
At Jared Glant on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Love it.
CardoneU.com if you want to skill up with the number one sales training platform in the world. Join our Facebook community, CardoneU Connect. Join me and Jason in that group for our witty banter and
I was waiting for the pitch.
In-depth Q&A, CardoneU.com. You sell that for $10,000 a year. You can get it now for only $99 a month.
Love it. I got in $59, suckers.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. You know why? Because you were an action taker and got to the 10X growth con.
Thanks, Jared. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.